introduction and then did discuss the first discussion question. And you know, we will be getting into question two here in just a minute. Before we do that, I've asked Brother Brian if he would to lead us in an opening prayer.
Dear God, our great Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day that you've given to us, the beautiful weather outside. Thank you for this time that we've had tonight to sing songs and study from your word. For the lesson that was brought to us this morning by Tanner, we're so thankful for this day that we have to come to worship you. We pray that you'll be with Jim tonight as he leads us in the study, and be with the teachers in the back. Please be with all of us that are here, that we would have open minds, that we would be wanting to learn. Please help us to be trying to study more, to be closer to you every day of our life. Please be with us through this hour, Jesus.
Okay, so the second question we will be dealing with tonight then is, what effect did fear, uncertainty, and doubt have on the Israelites? And a fairly lengthy passage for you to read in Numbers 13:25 through 14:45. So I don't know if you had the chance to read that before class, but I don't want to take the time to read the entire text there. That'd be a fairly lengthy reading. But let's just see if we can answer that question, though, before we even cover any of the text. What effect did it have on those Israelites that are talked about in that passage?
They decided they couldn't take it.
Okay, they couldn't take the land. What was the final result of all this, though? Wandering for 40 years. They were not going to be able to enter the land. And over in chapter 14, verse 29, it says, all the numbered men from 20 years and up were going to die in the wilderness. I'll go ahead and go. I highlighted a few verses here that I'll go ahead and mention here. It says that this is after the spies had returned. They'd gone into the land and checked it out. And when they came back, they told, verse 27, it says, thus they told him, I'm in chapter 13. Thus they told him and said, we went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large, and moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. So, they come back with a good report about the land, but the bad news is, you know, we just can't take it. They're too powerful. And then if we drop down to verse 30, it says, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, we should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it. So he's, you know, more positive about this. But the others say, well, no, we are like grasshoppers in their sight, and you know, they're arguing back and forth here. And finally, it says that we come down here to verse 6. It says, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land, and if the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us. And then down in verse 10 of chapter 14, the rest of the people wanted to take up stones and stone them to death. In verse 11, we see that the Lord is angry with them. He wants to destroy them, but Moses intercedes for them, though, and, you know, ask the Lord not to do that. And this is one thing that I want to mention concerning what Moses does here, that God is willing to listen to us if we have a concern. Now, we're not going to change his will. We're not going to do that. But when you go over to the book of Acts, for instance, in chapter 9 of the book of Acts, when the Lord told Ananias to go and talk to Saul. Ananias says, hey, you know, we've heard about this Saul guy. I don't think that's a good idea. But the Lord listened to him and then told him, go. And so, anyway, in this particular case, the Lord did listen to Moses. He forgave them, but he said they're not going to enter the land. They will die in the wilderness. Let's see if there's anything else I wanted to... Of course, we have already seen that Joshua and Caleb were the only two that gave the favorable report. So anyway, that's just in a nutshell what's in that particular reading. And if you haven't had a chance to read that on your own if you would like, and you can get all those details. So they were not going to enter the promised land. There were 12 spies went into the land. They brought back the fruit of the land, but they said, we can't take it. And let's see what. That's bad when you look down at your own notes and you don't know what you wrote. Okay. Well, anyway, the report that they gave, though, filled the people full of fear and doubt and uncertainty. That's what we're talking about in this lesson. And have you ever listened to a any kind of political campaign speech or a debate? And what's one thing that usually happens when you've listened to all that? I mean, you may favor one side or the other. You know, when the presidential debates, you know, who we always are concerned about who won the debate. But regardless of what the outcome is and how we think it came out anyway, what is one thing that you can almost certainly come away from after listening to all that stuff?
They disagree.
They disagree, yeah.
Somebody's lying.
Well, they really try and stir your passion up for where you stand.
Okay.
It's also lecturing.
Right. Now, all that's true.
Confusion.
Okay, confusion. Okay, and that's going to get us right to what we're dealing with here now. Fear, doubt, and uncertainty. Don't you have some doubts about some of the things that you hear? I mean, when I hear, especially in presidential debates, when they throw out all these figures on different things, you know, all their math, I wonder where in the world they come up with all this stuff. I mean, how do they get all these numbers? And it's just it's confusion, it's chaos, and if you really stop and think about it, there's a lot of fear and doubt and uncertainty after listening to all that. Well, what have these people previously seen? You know, they've got this bad report and the people are buying it. And I just like to ask, what have these people seen previous to this?
God's miracles.
They've seen lots of miracles. Okay.
They just saw the bodies of the Egyptians wash up on the shore after walking through the Red Sea.
Right. They've seen the power of God, haven't they? They've seen a lot of things that you and I have never seen. We've seen the power of God, but we haven't seen it in that kind of a way. And, I mean, they saw it firsthand, these different events happening. And you just mentioned a couple of them. But the Israelites were suffering greatly in the land of Egypt. And in Exodus 3:7, that's when Moses was called by God. That's when you read about the burning bush and anyway, Moses is intrigued by that, but receives all this instruction then, that he's the one that is going to lead the people out of Egypt. And, of course, you understand that he had a lot of fear and doubt and uncertainty himself before that conversation was over, and God was not pleased with him during part of that. But they were suffering greatly, and God had seen their affliction and had heard their cries. They wanted out of there. In chapters 7 through 12 of Exodus, the people saw the power of God in the 10 plagues that were performed there. And not one of the things that's interesting about that, as I recall, is that during some of those plagues, those things were not happening in the part of the land where the Israelites were living. It was only where the Egyptians were living where they were taking place. And then, of course, when the final plague took their firstborn and did not harm those from Israel. And then when they finally left there then, remember Sarah mentioned a while ago about the Red Sea, Pharaoh realized that, you know, maybe I've done a foolish thing here, and then it appeared that they're just out there wandering around, don't know where they're going. That wasn't really the case, but anyway, they decide to pursue the Israelites and bring them back. And, of course, the children of Israel were crying, you know, you've brought us out here to die. Why didn't you just leave us in Egypt? Well, Moses tells them not to be afraid, and, of course, we see the parting of the Red Sea, see that miracle, and they cross through on dry land. Of course, you can read all kinds of arguments about, you know, what part of the Red Sea did they cross, and, you know, whether it was even that deep or not. Well, obviously it was deep enough that you could not cross it in the condition that where they came up to it, and they ended up crossing on dry land. And then once they crossed and the Egyptians tried to cross through, the water caved back in on them, swallowed them all up, and they all perished. When they got through there, then got into the wilderness, they weren't satisfied with what they had to eat. And so in chapter 16 of Exodus, God sent the manna. They had bread in the morning and meat to eat in the evening. In chapter 17, they weren't happy because they didn't have enough water, so water was provided for them. But, you know, they probably saw a lot more than that, but we know about those things. Though, they saw tremendous power there, and especially the situation with them crossing the Red Sea. I mean, it'd be pretty hard to forget that, I would think. But they've seen all this, and we just don't think we can take this land. They finally come to this land that God is going to give them, and they don't want it because they're afraid. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt have taken over, and it's in total control. Why is that the case? I mean, these people have seen it all. It appears anyway. They've seen the power of God. And you would think that they would know that this is something that they can do. Anyway, we see what's happened, though, and see that they're going to die in the wilderness because of their unbelief. Okay, one of the things that we find in the Old Testament, early on and really all the way through it, what is one of the things that God said, if you will obey me, if you'll do what I ask of you, what is it that God promised them? If you'll obey me, he's going to be with them. He's going to bless them. I mean, they're going to have everything. But on the other hand, if they don't do what he asked them to do, what's going to happen then? They're going to be cursed. And we see this throughout. And, of course, we see, as time goes on, you know, we see what happens here. But then after they finally did have a group of people that went in and took the land, and then they fell away from God, and they would fall away, and then they would come back, and they'd fall away, and they'd come back. You remember the time of the judges when the judges would come along and save them again. But God was always willing to forgive them if they would repent, but it finally got to the point where later on in their history, they ended up being driven out of their land and going in the different captivities. Let me give you a couple passages concerning that idea of the fact that if they did what they were supposed to, they'd be blessed. In Exodus 19:5, we see that they would be his people. In Deuteronomy 11:27 or 27:28, over there we find that if they did obey, they'd be blessed, and if they didn't, they'd be cursed. So they've had all this instruction. They've seen the power of God. What's wrong with them? Well, what?
They lose
their faith. Okay, lost their faith. But, okay, we're looking at them, though, and say, what in the world is wrong with these people? You know, they've seen everything. I mean, how could they be so blind and not be willing to, not understand that God was going to take care of them? Well, we can be critical of them, but we do the same thing all the time. We've seen the power of God. Now, like I say, we maybe haven't seen it in the same way. You know, we haven't seen any great body of water separate so that we can walk through it. But we have, we have the accounts of those things. We see other things that show that God is there. If you would, turn over to the book of Romans, chapter 1. And I think we've probably gone through this passage another time during this study, but this is fitting here, I think. Over in Romans chapter 1, verse 18, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what is made, so that they are without excuse." Now this is talking about, not talking about us in particular, but it applies to us though. And, if a person doesn't recognize the power of God, they are without excuse, is what this is saying here. There are things there for us to see that we have no reason to be unbelieving. And here the Israelites, they are without excuse. We are without excuse. So, anyway, when we look at the situation they were in, it's easy for us to look at that and say, well, how could they be like that? But we have other situations of our own, and so we need to be aware of that and make sure that we're not doing the same thing. So sometimes the reason we don't do what we should do is because of what we're talking about tonight. We're afraid. We are fearful. We're uncertain. We're doubtful. And it was just like last Wednesday when we were talking about Eve. The things that the serpent was presenting to her, it started making you think, well, what was I thinking about before? And you get to think in another way and think, well, maybe this is possible. So we look for answers somewhere else sometimes. And maybe one of the problems that they had, and maybe that we have, is that sometimes that we forget that we are made in the image of God. And we're here to glorify God. We may, we forget who we are. Have you ever paid any attention to what's going on in the world? not just today, but, you know, there's, wouldn't you agree, though, that there's a lot of crazy things going on out there? Something that I have heard about a couple of times from different sources in the past couple of months is that there are people that want to be identified as animals. They don't want to be identified as people. People that want to be identified as cats, for instance. I know of a situation in particular where a child has gone to a school in another location. It wasn't here. Maybe it's going on here, and I don't know it, but they are being forced or told that they have to meet the needs of that particular child, and you cannot make fun of them. And, of course, I mean, we don't want to do that anyway, but they want to be identified as a cat. They meow like a cat. And there was somebody that wrote an article in response to this that we don't allow animals in school. And if they want to be cats, then they need to be eating cat food and, you know, they need to stay in a shelter where a cat belongs. But it seems pretty weird to me that somebody would be wanting to identify themselves that way, and the other problem is their parents should be teaching them that that's not what they are. But anyway, just bringing out the point, though, that they don't know who they are. And we need to remember who we are. We're made in the image of God. Now, that's just an example of somebody full of fear and uncertainty and doubt, obviously. They just don't know what's going on. You know, I don't know if any of you are familiar with who Jerry Clower is. He's been deceased for probably 20 years now. But he was a comedian. And he was always talking about the Ledbetter family, and I was listening to a recording of his one time where he says, yes, there really was a Ledbetter family, and he started naming all of them, and then when he got down to the end, the last child's name was Clovis. And he was talking about how Clovis was a guy that was the saddest person that he'd ever known because he didn't want to be Clovis Ledbetter. He wanted to be a log truck. And he went around everywhere like he was a log truck. And I get a kick out of that story. It's a funny story. I laugh at that. But when it comes to the point where it isn't funny, though, is when you really think that's what you are. You've forgotten where you came from. You don't know who you are anymore. And that's sad. Well, obviously the Israelites have forgotten who they are, where they've come from. They've forgotten who's been taking care of them all this time. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt is certainly in their vocabulary anyway at this time. God's been taking care of them, but they don't trust him. They've forgotten where their real security is. And remember when Peter was out on the boat and Jesus come walking on the water. And anyway, Peter said, if that's really you, let me come to you. And he told him to come. So he's walking on the water. But then he got worried about the storm, took his eyes off Jesus, and began to sink. So there's another example of forgot who he was and, you know, who he was following. He became afraid. So that's really all I've got to deal with on that particular question. Does anybody else have any? I mean, we've had some good comments, but maybe you got something else that you would like to add to this right now.
I was going to say it's the same enemy creeping into their mind as it was whenever you think about the temptation of Jesus that we studied about last lesson. You know, Jesus was hungry, and then Satan tried to create doubt in his mind, just like he did the children of Israel at this point. You know, he's creating doubt in their mind, and once they start to doubt, it just builds and builds and builds until you see it no longer trusting God.
And the only way we're going to be able to overcome that is if, for us anyway, we've got to get our heads into the book and really get to know God. I remember Shane did a lesson a couple months back talking about really knowing God. And, well, that's the only avenue we have to get there, to really know Him and know what He can do for us. Anything else? So if there's not, we'll see. Let's go ahead and go down to question 3 then. The text given there is from John 12, 37 through 43. And that's not quite as lengthy, so let's go ahead and read that one. John 12, 37 through 43. These things Jesus spoke, and he went away and hid himself from them. But though he had performed so many signs before them, yet they were not believing in him. This was to fulfill the word of Isaiah the prophet, which he spoke, "Lord, who has believed our report, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" For this reason they could not believe, for Isaiah said again, "He has blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, so that they would not see with their eyes and perceive with their heart and be converted, and I will heal them." These things Isaiah said because he saw his glory and he spoke of him. Nevertheless, many of the rulers believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him for fear that they would be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the approval of men rather than the approval of God. So the question is, what effect did the fear have on some of the rulers in Israel in the days of Jesus then? Well, I mean, what was the final result of this particular thing here? They believed in him, but what was their action that they took? I didn't catch the first part of that.
Well, I mean, some people did.
Yeah, but the ones that didn't, though, and the final result was that, you know, they didn't do what they needed to do because they loved the approval of men rather than the approval of God. And you know, sometimes we have things a certain way, and we don't like to change, and we want to just keep things like they are. And that appears to be part of their problem. I mean, they were worried about the approval of men, but they didn't really want to make a change here. Matthew 10:28 talks about not to be afraid of men, but to be afraid of the one who can send you to hell, that being afraid of the Creator in that particular way. That, and maybe another problem that they had, this is just my own thinking here, maybe they just didn't really have the hope that they needed. And let's just define what hope is. There was a definition that we used to use for that a long time ago, and maybe some of you remember that. What's that? I heard part of what you said. I think you're thinking of Hebrews 1 is what you're thinking of. But the actual definition of hope, though, you know, we use that word hope a lot. You know, we hope that this is going to happen or that's going to happen. But that's a pretty poor use of the word hope, really, when you really define it. The definition that I've heard for years, and I mean this isn't a lot of detail, but it's when you have something that you desire and you expect to get it. It's desire plus expectation. And that's why I say the way we use the word sometimes, that's not really the way we use it. And, you know, they want to hold on to what they've already got. There's a passage in the book of Romans that I think basically says the same thing that I'm telling you in this definition. In Romans chapter 8 and verse 24. For in hope we have been saved, but hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what he already sees? So anyway, I think that is basically saying the same thing that I said a while ago, that you don't hope for that which you already see. They see things the way they are and apparently don't want to change that. They want to keep things the way they have them. Another thing that we've talked about before many times is that one of the things that they were expecting in the Messiah when he came to was that he was going to be a physical king that would free them from the Romans, and you know, they just had a totally different concept of what the Messiah was really going to do. Well, maybe we have some of these same problems if we are willing to admit it. And we may be like the rich young man that, you know, asked Jesus what he needed to do to have eternal life in Matthew 19. And when he told him he needed to give up his possessions, that he was sorrowful, he didn't want to change. So sometimes there are changes that have to be made. Let's see, I had a... I had made myself a note here concerning a story that I heard on the news last night. You know, we're not really wanting change a lot of times. And there was a story on the news about young athletes and how expensive it is to do some of the things that they do. And of course, the particular story they were focusing on was a story about a young man who plays ice hockey. And the equipment for that is extremely expensive. And you know, I think the bottom line is, though, that, you know, there may be some changes. You may have to do something else. And sometimes in our following God, there are changes that we need to make instead of holding on to the past. You know, we did a lesson not too long ago in this series. He was talking about, in Matthew chapter 5, about if a man looks at a woman to lust after, he's committed adultery in his heart. And he talks about taking, you know, if your right hand makes you stumble, then you need to cut it off. And you need, the idea is that you need to get rid of whatever the problem is that you have that's keeping you from doing what you need to do. And that is true here, too. I know that particular passage isn't talking about this particular subject, but it still applies. Maybe jealousy was another problem that they had going to lose. You know, this Jesus guy, he's, you know, he just taken over, and he's everybody's going to be following him. We got to do something about this. So there was another problem that they had. And, of course, they asked Jesus the question one time, by what authority are you doing these things that you do? And what was his response?
Not by my own.
What's that?
Not by my own, by God.
Okay, but he presented a particular question to them, though. He said, you know, you tell me about John the Baptist, whether it is the baptism of John the Baptist was from men or if it was from God. And they wouldn't answer the question, and so he wouldn't answer theirs either. And they were concerned about authority, but yet they didn't want to, they weren't willing to abide in it themselves. Okay, anything else on question three there? Didn't take quite as much time for that one as it did question two. That was there was a lot to cover, though, in that one. Okay, question four. What is that the devil wants us to doubt? So let me just ask you, what are some things that the devil wants us to doubt? Okay. And kind of got into some of that with the question on Wednesday night when the serpent was dealing with Eve and, you know, putting the doubts in her head about that. What else?
Our worthiness for eternal life with God.
Okay. There probably really isn't a wrong answer that you could give, I guess, on this.
He wants us to doubt that there's also eternal punishment.
Okay. Wants us to doubt there's eternal punishment.
I think with Eve, he wanted her to doubt the goodness of God, but he held her best interest.
I think this was brought out Wednesday night, you know, that he's saying, you know, God just, he doesn't want you to have, you know, everything that you could have. And probably showing that God, you know, does not care for us, which he does. Something else that I had down here is that he wants us to doubt our own faith. Let's see, 1 Peter. I wrote down 1 Peter 5:8 here. Be sober in spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And so there was another thought I had on that. You know, he prowls around like a roaring lion. He's vicious in that way. But what do Satan and his servants, though, try to appear as, though? I mean, they're going to come up to you in some sort of vicious way.
I think it said somewhere angels of light.
Okay, I don't know if I wrote one down here. Okay, that's what I was thinking of, is the wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah, they're wolves, but they're appearing as something really nice, though. And so another passage I wrote down concerning him, though, you know, in John 8:44, he's the father of lies, causing us to doubt that there is truth. And it reminded me of what Pilate said that one time. He said, well, what's truth? And I would take that to be some kind of a sarcastic statement. You know, what's truth? And, I mean, people ask that question today. Causes us to doubt that the sin is a bad thing, possibly. So these are different things that the devil would want us to doubt. I mean, you know, you could write down your own list of different things. Concerning this idea of doubt, I'd just like to mention one other thing because it looks like we're about out of time. We are, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if some of you remember Jim Putterball. Of course, his brother preached here for about 3 or 4 years back in the 1980s. But I remember Jim Putterball making the statement one time that he had enrolled in some classes in some denominational schools. And he said, they talk so sweet and can be so convincing that his comment concerning that was that if I had not had other people around me to talk with about these different issues, that I feel like I could have very easily been pulled away and gone in the way of error. So anyway, we'll go ahead and end the class of that, and we'll pick up, try to finish the rest of this on Wednesday.